What we do is we record them, and then shortly after the webinar is complete, then we post them so that folks that cannot make the live event can access them at will 24/7 and, in fact, share them with others and educate themselves further and make sure that others get the information as well. So with that, what I want to do is just kind of give a little bit of lay the ground work here about how this will go. What we will do is I'll introduce our special guest for today in just a moment, and then what we'll do is we'll begin a little bit of a conversation, gathering and laying out some basic information. And then as we proceed, then I invite everyone that so chooses to participate by asking questions. And you can do that either way that you've accessed this, you have a method to accomplish that. If you're on the conference bridge line, you've called in, then just dial star 2 on your phone keypad, and we'll see that you'd like to have your line unmuted so that you can ask the question. You know, I'll certainly have to wait to kind of an opportune moment to do that, kind of at a pause between things being talked about. So we'll proceed in that fashion. And then if you've come to us on the Internet and you're listening that way, you've utilized a link to do so. Just underneath that link, there's a small question box. Type your question into that. It'd be helpful if you put at least the first name and city and state so we'd know who and where. And then I'll make sure that question gets asked of our special guest as we proceed. So with that, what I want to go ahead and do is to give you a little bit of information on our special guest today. We do have these webinars each and every week at the same time with a variety of different special guests. And although we've not had Dr. Laura Thompson on, we have had her husband, John Rappaport, several times, and they're aware of so much of the same information, but their particular areas of focus may differ some in that they may be focused on different parts of certain fields. So with that, Dr. Laura Thompson, CEO and founder of the Southern California Institute of Clinical Nutrition, is a family nutritionist who received her Ph.D. in human behavior and nutrition from Ryokan College, hopefully I pronounced that right, in L.A., and is board certified in naturopathic endocrinology. She has been in practice for 22 years. Her clinic, SCICN, Inc., is a thriving global phone consulting natural health practice with a natural product pharmacy servicing local and long-distance patients and customers. Dr. Thompson specializes in natural hormone programs for PMS, female and male menopause, infertility, adrenal stress balancing, brain nutrition, mood disorders, behavior and cognitive problems, insomnia, family and child health programs, ADD, allergies, asthma, behavior problems, unique hormone neurotransmitter, biofeedback, and nutritional testing, diligent communication with patients and customers, unrelenting research, lifting the veil of misinformation that patients receive from the media, the internet, and their medical professionals. She believes in the power of food and the power of the human being to create his or her own balance. And on that note, Dr. Thompson has authored 2 books, Our Children Are What Our Children Eat, and Smart Food, Smart Families. Resources for parents and teachers with 300 studies included. The books focus on food and supplement recommendations that maximize school performance and minimize behavior problems and meltdowns. Dr. Thompson is also a speaker in the holistic health arena. Book tours, free wellness clinics, lectures on natural hormones, talks for parent groups about child nutrition. She is driven by the philosophy that when we feel good and have the education and confidence to be proactive with our health, we become self-reliant and can be independent from the conventional medical system. She lives with her husband, John Rappaport, investigative reporter in Encinitas, California. Welcome, Dr. Laura. It's a pleasure having you here today.
Thanks, Earl. Glad to be here.
Yes, and, you know, I must confess, I hear your bio here that we've all heard together, and it looks like that you have a lot of good information, and you're working in some excellent areas that I have some personal interest in, and that I know, you know, just a little bit about. But gosh, it's hard to even know where to begin. How did you get into this? What spurred you? What stimulated you or moved you in this direction? And how did this all come about, bringing you up to where you are today?
Well, first of all, I was brought up on health foods. My dad was an avid Adele Davis follower back in the 50s and 60s, and so it was forced on me as a child. And of course, like most people in my teen years and 20s, I rebelled and didn't continue on that path. And found that my body was breaking down. And so just sort of on my own, I decided to integrate some of the things that I learned about healthy eating from when I was a kid and into early teen years. And so I embarked on a path to learn more about nutrition and how it affects the body and the brain. Because I was a musician at the time, my whole family's musicians. And although I was classically trained, I went to conservatory and all that, I went out and played rock and roll and disco in the 70s and 80s. And I started losing my hearing because I had all these big bass cabinets in my ear and music was blasting. And I thought to myself, I had heard somewhere that you could regenerate your hearing. So I started investigating that, and eventually it led me to try to help others in not just with that topic, but in other areas of physical improvement. And eventually went back to school and got my PhD in nutrition and human behavior, which is basically the body-mind connection. And from there, I followed the path that most people do, which is you learn more after you get out of school than what you learned when you were in school. And so I became very interested in how what we eat affects how we think and how we emote. And another topic of interest to me actually stemmed from my musical observations, which was my dad was a music teacher, and I noticed that he was, you know, he was working with a lot of junior high and high school kids, and so the voices were changing because the hormones were developing. And I was always fascinated to see how, like, he'd come home from, you know, from school and be talking at the dinner table about, you know, I knew a lot of the kids, so how so-and-so's voice had changed. And I was thinking to myself, gee, I wonder if this person looks, it was mostly the guys, because that's where it's so noticeable in the voice change. I wonder if this person looks any different. You know, is there a physical, you know, something that happens physically that goes along with the hormonal changes? And that always fascinated me. So eventually I got into natural hormone work and how the brain affects the hormones and vice versa, and how we can feed the brain to enhance cognitive function and sleep and, you know, those sort of transitional times in life like PMS and menopause, and how people can improve their energy. And so, you know, that's pretty much a quick nutshell version of how I got into it. Are you still there, Earl?
I appreciate you giving that information. That I'm sorry, I was muted out there. I was speaking, but I realized that no one was hearing me. I didn't want to have any background while you were laying that all out, so apologize for that little bit of pause.
Okay.
I'm definitely here, definitely listening. Yeah, I I certainly hear that you have a passion and a clarity behind what you're doing. And our topic today, of course, is the nutritional solutions for keeping your brain tip-top, what to do, what not to do. And I guess, you know, without much ado otherwise, maybe we can move right into a little bit of, clarity in that particular area, what that all means, how that plays out, and how we can learn things that maybe we can utilize to keep our brain tip-top. I think that's very essential to do that. Most people would say, I really want to do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, most of the I put the solutions into two categories. One is, identifying what the challenges are and what the health or nutritional basis for the challenges are. And number two is, how are you going to handle those? What are the solutions to deal with them? And so it came to me when I was working a lot with adults in the beginning of my practice, and they were being helped, and then they wanted to bring their children to me. And I was working a lot with kids with attention deficits and autism and hyperactivity. And, of course, the first thing I'd do as a nutritionist is take a dietary history. And, people eat a lot differently today than when I was a kid. And certainly when I was a kid, I was eating really purely, not that I did all my life, but I started to see from the dietary history how many toxins were in the food. And I embarked on a path of research for about 15 years about how toxins affect the brain. And eventually I wrote a book called Our Children Are What Our Children Eat, which is basically about this topic, brain nutrition, how to identify the toxins in your food, the nutrient depletion in a person's body, and then how to correct that. And so, basically what I did is I looked at all the different types of toxins that people were eating and how they actually affected the neurotransmitters of the brain, the brain chemicals, and then the brain chemicals affect your moods and your behavior and your sleep and your energy. And in identifying those toxins, I would start to change a person's food program by basically finding the natural equivalents. I find that people work really well with, okay, what am I going to substitute? What can I do? Rather than, here's the list of what you can't do. Okay, see you later. But what? How do I change this? So I work really hands-on with people because they're kind of lost if you don't actually give them, and we all are, if we don't get pat ideas about how to make the changes. And so in looking at the toxins, we would be basically looking at things like, you want me to go into that now?
Sure, that would be great.
Okay. Well, I identify toxins in various categories. One of the most prevalent types of toxins that you see today are preservatives and additives. And so they would be, if you look on an ingredient label, especially nowadays, you see these huge, long ingredient labels with, Latin words that you don't understand. And I always tell people right there, that's a clue. If it's something that you have a hard time pronouncing, then it's probably something you shouldn't be eating. But we'd be looking at things like BHA, BHT, TBHQ. These are petroleum-based food additives that are used for, basically preserving foods. They have antioxidant qualities for preserving especially the fats so that they don't deteriorate and, go bad on the shelf. And even something like TBHQ is used as an oil extender, so you get it in a lot of fast food French fries and various fast food chains, because it's a money savings for them to use the oil that they fry in for as long as possible. But these petroleum-based additives have been associated with learning and behavior problems. So right there, you know that you have one set of toxins that should be eliminated. And then you have things like, I won't go into a tremendous amount of detail, but phosphates, which are in carbonated drinks, they've been found to cause learning problems, oppositional behavior. Overconsumption can even result in calcium deficiency because the phosphorus binds with the calcium, so it can actually affect bone loss and, you know, nervous system problems. Then you have nitrites and nitrates, which are like in processed meats and preserved poultry and pork. They've been found to cause headaches. And, you know, there are even some studies leaning toward them being identified as carcinogens, cancer-causing agents. And you have sulfites and sulfates, and then you have sodium benzoate, which is also a preservative that actually reduces the availability of potassium in the body, which causes dehydration. Dehydration is one of the things that we found that really causes brain problems, deficiencies in neurotransmitters. And we're not just talking about how much water a person is drinking, but also how much water a person is absorbing at the cellular level. And if a person is dehydrated to begin with, the cells are not going to be turned on to accept the water that they're drinking. So that's one group. And I'll just briefly list the other groups. You have the flavorings like MSG and vanillin, you know, the sort of phony vanilla. The MSG, monosodium glutamate, for, you know, basically sort of the salt flavor. Then you have artificial food colorings, which they're pretty identifiable because, you know, the foods that are blue and red and green, most of them are not natural. And they're even in cough syrups, and they're even in a lot of pharmaceutical drugs. You can see them, FD&C blue and FD&C number 3 red and FD&C number 6 yellow. You can see these just listed right on the label, and you know right there, okay, well, this is going to impair brain function. Then you have the artificial sweeteners, which you could probably do a whole show on in and of itself. The aspartame, you know, the Equal, the saccharin, the sucralose, although that's not, you know, 100% studied yet, but these are all things that help us avoid sugar, but at the same time we incur a lot of other damage from. Then you have the pesticides and the chemical fertilizers, which I always tell people, if it's really expensive to buy organic food, so if that's a problem, then just use whatever you eat the most of organic. And that way, you know, you're really covering a lot of bases. And then you have the other foods like caffeine, which, you know, we sort of think of as one of the food groups. And the kids today especially are getting so much caffeine between the sports drinks, the energy drinks, and then, you know, even the coffee and the lattes that the kids and the teenagers are drinking. Geez, when I was a kid, I don't know, I might be identifying myself age-wise, but I didn't even like it. But, you know, it certainly wasn't even available and definitely not in a vending machine. But that causes malabsorption. It causes hyperactivity, causes blood sugar problems. And, you know, most people know this. They feel a heightened sense of mental function from it, which is why I'm sure a lot of people drink it. But you have to look at the downside of that, you know. You know, like with every peak, there's going to be a valley. So anyway, that's kind of an overview of the toxins that we find in foods, and that's one of the main things that I try and help people eliminate right off the bat.
So it sounds like that the types of things that you're talking about, besides being deleterious to our health, can very specifically impair brain function.
Oh, definitely.
And so then you know you've got a lot of stuff going on that's really difficult, you know, for us to function properly, particularly kids being formative like they are,
mm-hmm.
getting their brains and their bodies whacked by this type of exposure, total overload,
mm-hmm.
to the extent that they are. And I, you know, I've certainly seen the evidence of it in kids where, you know, you can see them where their kids will be playing or something, and all of a sudden they get their soft drinks, and boy, they just change. Man, they go, you know, get really weird from how they were before, and it's almost like I mean I can notice it. I really see it. Like they get a bunch of candy or cake or sweets or whatever, and then their soft drinks and just the whole shot. And man, it's just a total change. I'm surprised more people don't notice that and go, you know what? Every time we expose them to these things, they change. You know, their energy changes and their behavior and all the stuff that they're doing. Maybe we better back off of that a little bit, but that doesn't seem to happen, does it?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are just in denial about it, and they don't want to give them up themselves. I always say to the parents that I work with, you got to be the example. You got to do it yourself. You got to clean your cabinets, not have it in the house. And, yeah, everybody likes to have a treat, and everybody likes to celebrate and have birthday cake. And those are the things that should be, you know, sort of sporadic and special, but not for everyday use, especially as deleterious as they are, like you said.
That's certainly true. Well, you know, I guess that there's certainly probably all kinds of things that you know that are, on the other hand, brain boosters, brain supporters, you know, doing positive things towards brain function. I'm wondering, and maybe you could, does that seem appropriate to move into that area and give us a little bit of that type of information?
Sure. Well, there's a category of foods called superfoods, which probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with.
Sure.
And superfoods are just what they say. They're super. They're chocked with chock full of nutrients. And nowadays, with our foods so depleted in nutrients, I mean, you know, we have our soil replenished with basically three minerals after it's been stripped, and we need 70. So right there, a lot of kids are nutrient deficient. And this isn't kids. I mean, we're just kids. I mean, this is everyone. I like to use the example of children because a lot of parents like to help their kids before themselves, which is understandable. But anyway, the foods that have the high amount of nutrients and vitamins and a lot of the good fats would be things like, raw foods, for instance. You know, foods that have been unadulterated, foods that are alive with enzymes. I always say to people when, you know, something can sit around out of refrigeration without preservatives or anything and go bad quickly, that's the best type of food to eat because that's the food that's really going to offer you life. If you eat dead food, you create death. You eat live food, you create life. And so the raw foods in regards to vegetables and fruits is what we're talking about. One of the real chock full nutrient food groups is sprouts, and I know a lot of kids don't like sprouts and adults don't particularly, but different types of sprouts like sunflower sprouts and mung bean sprouts are pretty tasty. I also suggest sometimes just whipping them up and pureeing them and putting them in a little soup before you serve the soup, or you know, putting them in a smoothie. And you can even get you know, raw powders that you can put into smoothies that will offer a lot of nutrients. And then you have foods like colostrum, which is, of course, a lot of people get colostrum from mother's milk when they're breastfeeding. But you can get colostrum in the health food stores. You can get raw colostrum. It tastes kind of tangy, but, you know, it's so full of immune support. But you can also use colostrum capsules. I find these really good for immune support, for allergy elimination, for dealing with yeast infections and eczema and ear infections and that type of thing. And then you have lecithin, which is such great brain food and because it has all those phospholipids in it that build the double layer of the blood-brain barrier, which is so involved with how things get transported into the brain and how the brain gets protected. And lecithin is very pleasant tasting. Usually get it in either capsule form or powder form. And so that's a, when I was a kid, oh my gosh, my dad had us so brainwashed. We were allowed to have ice cream if we sprinkled lecithin granules over it. So every Sunday, we would have ice cream and sprinkle our lecithin granules over it, and you stir that up, and it tasted really, really great. And the whole his whole idea was lecithin offers the good fats that help to break down the bad fats. Like lecithin is really great for high cholesterol. So people who have plaque buildup in the brain, who might be dealing with memory problems or, you know, circulation to the brain issues, lecithin is really good for that because it helps to break down some of those bad fats. And then you have something like aloe even, you know, a very common succulent that is so healing for the gut, and that is a major important thing for helping to heal the brain, helping a healthy brain, is to make sure that the digestive tract is functioning properly. We hear this term leaky gut syndrome, which I know is kind of a gross term when you think about what the heck could that mean. Little tears or lesions are created in the intestinal tract when we bombard the intestinal tract with things like sugar and antibiotics and toxins, and even allergy foods can, over time, wear away the intestinal lining, and eventually food, undigested, you know, protein molecules leak into the bloodstream, and this causes a myriad of problems like in autoimmune problems and, you know, malabsorption issues, allergies, things like that. And so aloe is one of those things that really helps to heal the intestinal tract and therefore, you know, can help with brain function, not solely because of better nutrient absorption, but also because, and this is one of the main things I'd like to bring out in this talk, is that how important good digestive health is for brain function and how so many things, so many tactics you can use on your own that you don't need to bother your doctor with. They're overwhelmed, number one. They're undereducated about these issues. They really can't help you. Don't go into your doctor expecting to get nutritional information or advice, mostly. I mean, you know, some doctors are coming around and working more holistically, but you got to do these things on your own. And if you have the information to do that and the education about it, start employing these tactics. Man, the amount of improvements that you can see with your own emotional health and mental health, and then, of course, the ability to help the kids who are coming from such a, you know, they're coming from such a negative place as far as nutrition is concerned nowadays. So those are some of the foods, and then I can, you know, I don't want to talk, so I'll let you go. But we can also get into some specific nutrients that are really good for brain function in a little bit.
Okay, sure. That would be great. And I would. There's one that I can think of right away. I know it's good for a lot of things, but I just want to get your take on it. Because it seems like I've heard somewhere, I don't know what it was, of course, he's kind of mainstream with sort of mainstream semi-alternative. Dr. Oz, he's brought a lot of stuff onto the air. For people to wake up to start thinking about alternatives is just drugs and surgery. But it seems like I've heard him talk about coenzyme Q10 for brain function besides for heart and other things too. Is that, do you understand that to be the case, or is that?
Definitely. Yes, coenzyme Q10, of course, is, you know, CoQ10 is ubiquitous. It's in all our cells. It's a necessary nutrient that our cells use to create energy. And so just from that perspective, it's important for brain energy. But the other thing is that it's really, really good for oxygenating the brain and helping things get to the brain cells for nutrition so that the brain can operate the way it's supposed to operate.
Mm-hmm.
And CoQ10 is deficient in our food supply because it's been milled away in a lot of our grain-based products, you know, our processed foods, our flour products, our baked goods. when they're in their, when the flowers are in their raw state, which would be in the form of the grain, they contain CoQ10. But when they're milled away, they become deficient, depleted. And so it is now deficient in our food supply, and we find that it really works well for people to supplement with CoQ10. I'm sure a fair amount of your listeners are doing that already. I know I have a lot of patients that are interested in health, and I always ask them initially, what supplements are you taking now? What are you doing for yourself? And invariably, they'll mention that they're taking CoQ10.
Well, you know, I've done some dissolution tests on a few different nutrients, even capsules, you know, like soft gel capsules, and it's pretty shocking. Even if you squeeze the content out, if you have an oil suspension in a cap,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't. It's not water soluble. It's fat soluble, and it breaks down very little bit, so the absorption must be next to nil. Do you find that to be the case?
I use some liposomal CoQ10, which is highly absorbable. I think that's probably the case. I've found that since I've been using the liposomal version, it seems to be absorbed better. The other thing is that it can be taken along with fat, so that helps its absorption. Like, take your CoQ10 along with your fish oil, in other words, that type of thing.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. It really does. But, I mean, even with, you know, other nutrients, not even saying CoQ10, but just, you know, hard-pressed pills are, to me, are a disaster. A lot of those go through totally intact and don't break down. They found that to be the case in you're looking in some sewers and things of that nature, you know, glorious stuff to go do, right?
Right.
But then even sometimes with capsules and things like that, you know, I still see a problem now that I've begun to understand a little bit more about things that are called oil suspension in caps versus water-soluble types of things. And I'm starting to gravitate more and more towards, if I can get my nutrition in a liquid, that would be number one, whatever supplement it is. Number two, to me, seems like it would be a powder that, you know, could be broken down. The next step up would, if you can't find it either of those ways, maybe if it were in something that were chewable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and from there on up, it's just pretty much toss-up. But I certainly wouldn't want to go to anything in a hard-pressed pill. It just, I mean, the chances of it breaking down and being absorbed seem just about nil. Are you concurring with a lot of that?
Do concur with that. I do. I used to use tableted products that were chewable. And way back in the early days of my practice, but I found that a lot of people, they tasted terrible. A lot of people wouldn't want to chew them. And so in my quest for finding something that will help people comply, because it's really good to, it's one thing to have a nutritional program on paper, because, you know, I write out a person's program and, you know, time of day and the amount of supplements or dose of each product. And it really sometimes looks good on paper, and then I think, okay, that's why I like to interview people for pretty extensively before I do a program, because I want to make sure that they're going to be able to comply. Because if they can, especially if they're dealing with memory problems or, you know, attention deficits or their mind is on other things, I like to make programs as easy as I can for people. So using the tablets are not easy for people, because for some people they get stuck in the throat. And, you know, I spoke to a colon therapist years ago who said, never use tableted products. I see them coming through the tubes all the time. So anyway, I really embarked on, you know, looking for highly absorbable products. As a nutritionist and someone who's working to help people achieve their health goals, I have to do things that work. I have to offer products that actually create change, you know. And like I said, it could look good on paper and it could sound really good, but it has to work. And so it's true. I use a lot of liquided products. I use a lot of powders. And for some people, they love that because they feel like they're really getting it. Other people may have a little more difficult time because maybe they don't like tastes or something. But, you know, like I said, you have to work with the person. But I agree. And that's why I use those forms of nutritional supplements more than anything.
Great. That makes sense. It really does. Well, I've always believed that if something doesn't break down, how are you going to absorb it? And if you don't absorb it, how is it getting to where it needs to get to? But if you put it in your body and it doesn't break down, it doesn't get absorbed, won't it have to either be expelled or part of it, in fact, even stored in little pockets in the body somewhere? Is that something you know to be true, or is that just...
Yeah, and they become burdensome for the liver and for the digestive tract. I work with a lot of people with what we call congested liver, which is not a medical problem. I'm sure medical people would probably be raising their eyebrows if they heard the term. But basically, I think a lot of us have congested livers nowadays because of all the toxicity in the food and the air and the medications and all that. And so when a liver is in that state, it's not going to be able to transform what you're taking into what you want it, to do. And so we're getting into a little bit more detail here, but sometimes that's the first step that I work with people on, is helping to decongest the liver, to lighten the load on the body. And I'm not talking about putting people on cleanses and fasts initially, because that's typically a disaster if I haven't worked with them before. Eventually we get to that level. But I even use a lot of homeopathics, especially the liquid form homeopathics, because they really very gently move things so that the liver can decongest and the kidneys and the blood, the lungs and the lymph are able to filter properly. The term I use is opening the channels. Let's let the body sort of get opened up so that it can normally do what it's supposed to eliminate what it's supposed to eliminate. This is why I think cleanses and detoxes have gotten a bad name, although a lot of people like them and there's positive things about them. The people that sort of shake their finger at it is because people who do them, who aren't prepared for it, end up having, they go to bed for 2 days. They have nausea. They become dehydrated. Their bowels don't stop moving. They feel horrible. They can't, they can't work effectively. They weren't prepared for it. And so I think that in that kind of situation, you really have to be very gentle and work with people to open the channels before they even go on a full-on nutritional program. So that way they're actually going to get it, and they're actually going to be able to utilize it, and it's actually going to do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, it seems like any time you're doing any type of detoxing or cleansing or whatnot, a major process that you're going through, that hydration is so important. Otherwise, things can be kind of maybe trapped. Maybe they don't pump out to the extent that they need to, and this can be a little extra buildup. Is that kind of what you're saying there too?
I think that hydration is probably the most important thing in embarking on a nutritional program, because of what you just said. The cells, if they're not electrically turned on, which basically means the sodium, potassium, chloride, the spin on the cells is not going to be proper, then they're not going to accept the nutrition. And that's where it really counts, at the cellular level. Then on the macro level, as far as just helping food move through the digestive tract, water is a fantastic digestive aid, and on top of it being a mineral source of sorts, it does help peristalsis and helps move the food along in the intestines. It's, you really can't do without it.
Mm.
I mean, that's kind of a stupid thing to say, but... but you can't.
Okay. Well, and I know sometimes then when people do have, like you were touching on before, something that you might refer to as a less than positive experience when you're doing some type of protocol, and maybe there's some detoxing going on, and they have symptoms, and those symptoms a lot of times are referred to as a healing crisis. Mm-hmm. And some people can get annoyed as can be and say, oh, yeah, you're going to give it that name like it's all just fine, but you don't know what I'm going through. You know, whatever it is they're going through. But, you know, I think there's a certain amount of merit to that, that you can, it is a process of healing, and it, sometimes part of it can be uncomfortable, but not to just give up on it and say, okay, well, it's uncomfortable, so I don't want to do it. It's kind of what's on the other side of going through that process and establishing a new balance, a new level of you know, whatever it is that you're moving into with the protocol that you're doing. So a little encouragement to people to move forward with things like that. If they're working with someone that knows exactly what they're doing and they're doing it according to a good balanced protocol instead of ripping right through something.
Right.
But we do, unless there's some other area that you definitely want to get out right now, we do have a few questions that we could entertain, or we can shelve them for now and wait a little bit. What's your preference?
I definitely want to answer some questions. I just wanted to say one more thing on this, and that is how important, I mean, we all know we need our brains, you know, to work, to feel good, and just be. But the brain, there's such a trickle-down effect from the neurotransmitters in the brain, you know, stimulating the hormones to how we handle stress, whether it's dietary stress or emotional or work stress or family stress, whatever it is. The interaction of the brain chemicals, the neurotransmitters, with the hormones is so important. And yeah, the sex hormones are part of that, but I'm mainly referring to the metabolic hormones, the adrenal stress hormones, cortisol and DHEA, as well as the thyroid hormones, because these are the hormones that actually help us handle life. And when the brain is nourished properly, you get, it's like the switch goes on, and all of a sudden the room is lit up. And if the switch doesn't go on, then that trickle-down effect of how the brain chemicals affect the hormones can, you know, it can be disastrous, because we could have, you know, fatigue, we could have insomnia, we can have headaches, we could have depression, we can have heart palpitations, we can have anxiety and foggy thinking, you know, it just kind of goes on and on. So you really can't divorce the two is my point, the hormones and the brain chemistry.
Okay, that makes total sense. It really does. Okay, and I just want to remind everyone that we're speaking with Dr. Laura Thompson of the Southern California Institute of Clinical Nutrition, and we're really focusing on the brain, but we're touching on all kinds of things along the way related to wellness and health and self-healing and self-responsibility in regards to our, you know, our health matters. And I want to invite folks that, as some have already submitted some questions, if you're on the phone line and you have a question for Dr. Thompson, then what you want to do is dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll see that you have a question, and we'll unmute your line so that you can speak with her briefly in whatever area that you're seeking clarification or further information. And then we have some questions that have come to us by way of the Internet link. Those of you that are listening online, you'll see that small question box that's just right underneath the link, and type your question in there along with a name and city and state. That'd be real helpful. And submit that to us, and we'll go ahead and make sure that that question gets asked. And we do have, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right. In one way I could see this, the name would be Dr. Hall, but it could be Dr. Halley. I'm not really sure. It's H-A-L-L-E, so I'm not sure of the pronunciation. but the doctor says they're in Los Angeles, and asks, what natural methods have you found to be helpful with ADD, not ADHD? We have had some success with eliminating sugar and food additives, employing neurofeedback and chiropractic, and methylphenidate, Ritalin, with great success, but the last we have found over 15 years can have worrisome side effects such as lessened bone and tooth density and visual floaters. Any comment on that, Dr. Thompson?
So help with attention deficits without the hyperactivity, in other words. Well, sure. I mean, I think you're on the right track there. I think it's important to, number one, identify allergens. What I find is this. I have a chapter in my book that has to do with how the body and the brain work together and how sometimes mental diagnoses actually stem from physical problems. So identifying those physical problems is basically what I do when I work with kids with attention deficits or adults with attention deficits. So the one thing is looking at allergens because we all know that allergies cause inflammation, and there can be inflammation in the brain. And so when you eliminate the allergy foods or the environmental allergens, or you work on them from the natural perspective by improving the immune system, then a lot of the problems and the confusion that happens in those synapses starts to balance out. So that's number one. Number two is the blood sugar balance is, I think, the number one, and you said that you're already doing that. That is, oh my gosh, so important. It is, because that's, you know, balancing the blood sugar is how we get our fuel to the brain. The brain runs on glucose. So helping that happen effectively is really important, either or, you know, in combination, using foods and proteins, amino acids to help to balance the blood sugar, complex carbohydrates, getting the kids off sugar and processed white flour foods so that the brain has more consistent fuel. And then utilizing certain nutrients to help to balance the blood sugar, which would be things like B vitamins and, you know, certain herbs that are really good for blood sugar balance. Because most of the kids with ADD, I find, are hypoglycemic. So basically what that means is their bodies are making too much insulin, and the blood is being taken, the glucose is being taken out of the blood too quickly, so therefore the brain does not get fueled. Well, how the heck can you think without a brain that's getting fueled? And that would tend to lead to deficits in learning. So, and then the other thing is toxic overload. Between the vaccinations and the mercury fillings and the different toxins in our food supply and in the air and in the water, you know, this stuff affects the brain and circulation to the brain, for instance. And so, you know, identifying toxic overload, we do metal testing through the urine with a lot of people. Sometimes that has a very significant outcome. So we do some oral chelation when we work with that. And so those are some of the main things, but one of the things that I find for the ADD kids is working on healing the gut, because nine times out of ten they have a history of use of antibiotics, they have overgrowth of yeast or bad bacteria in the intestinal tract, they're dealing with that thing that we call leaky gut, and so they're not actually they're just not getting the nutrition. So healing the gut, you know, it's pretty hard fast that the brain will improve when that happens. And so identifying the gut offenders, and sometimes what we even do is stool testing for that, but the neurotransmitter testing, which, doctor, you're probably already doing because it sounds like you're pretty forward-thinking with the biofeedback and all that, but offering different nutrient products with certain amino acids that actually help to build the brain chemicals like serotonin and dopamine and GABA. I find that to be very helpful. The kids with ADD typically have serotonin problems, and often they have dopamine imbalances. A lot of them will tend toward depression. They'll have GABA imbalances also. So those are just a few things that I would typically do.
Okay.
Sorry, Earl. I wanted to say one thing really fast. A lot of the neurotransmitter testing now is covered by health insurance, by people who have PPO health insurance, where they can see and see other doctors and choose their doctors and their services. And so that has been a really big thing in my practice, because nowadays, with a lot of people not wanting to spend as much money on their health, if they do have health insurance, it really helps to have something that can be covered. Because in my line, there's really very little that's covered by insurance, but that particular brain chemistry test is.
Okay. Well, it's always encouraging to see that whereas in the past there were so many things that were not covered, there has been a gradual loosening up to where they're willing to cover more and more things that are in the direction of alternative health measures. Have you concur? You see that as well, or?
Yeah, I don't know where that's going exactly, but sure. I mean, look at all the people that have coverage for their chiropractic services and their acupuncture services, and I find a lot of people have health savings accounts, which isn't exactly insurance coverage, but people are, businesses are really opening up and trying to help people in ways that they know the insurance isn't going to cover. But yeah, I definitely have. And in the area of nutritional testing, there are quite a few nutritional tests. I call them nutritional tests, but they're done at medical labs that are now covered by insurance, certain insurance companies. So that's really very encouraging.
Yes, and I have heard also that some people have been successful, although they did have to maybe explore and go through a few steps of some of the more traditional ways of working with things. When those didn't meet with success, then sometimes they were able to call in to their insurance provider and inquire and also work with the doctor in such a way that they may get special approval to cover something they wouldn't normally cover because you've already tried the other protocols and they have not been successful at where you're trying to go with it. So
that
might be something for people to push and to ask for what they want in a polite and effective manner.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll get it that way. They'll get a special approval to go through with whatever it may be.
That's very
anyway,
true. I've had a couple of people who have gone to their medical doctors to get some testing ordered that they couldn't get covered through me. And I'm going to say 90% or more of the time they won't do it. But occasionally, some people will, some doctors will, because they can see that they're not helping. So they will want to see their patient get better. So, yeah, I think there is definitely some opening up.
Well, that's always good. The doctor also, and I like the way they talk about Los Angeles. This one says Los Angeles, California Republic. Another place they said Los Angeles. Los Angeles. Anyway, there's so many takes on that. The doctor is saying, please, what is the problem with vanillin? Please explain that some artificial sweeteners like aspartame are worse than others.
Okay. Well, but I think that's true. There are different levels of offense that different preservatives can create. I think one of the problems with vanillin, I mean, one of the studies I read indicates that it blocks one of the enzymes in the liver that breaks down the neurotransmitters like dopamine, serotonin, noradrenaline, and can create an abnormal buildup of those particular brain chemicals, which can tip the scales, you know, and cause emotional or behavioral or cognitive problems. So I just put them all in one group. You know, it's not up to me to say this one is worse than that one, but, you know, I agree that probably aspartame is worse than vanillin.
Okay.
And one thing to remember is that when something is derived from petroleum, that ain't good, you know, which vanillin is, so.
Is there a correlation between the same way with returning again to all suspended caps and like you say, petroleum products and things like that? Is there the thing about the body being more than 70% water and oil and water not mixing too well?
I don't know the answer to that, but that's a really great thought. I think that has a lot of potential for being the truth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just curious on that.
Yeah.
I don't profess to be a health expert or anything like that. I've just done a little reading and heard a lot of lectures and trying to piece things together and try to make sense of it. But there's a lot to learn always. The doctor asks one more thing here. Well, I guess it says not a question but a comment. I have found that some of my patients have found that the ubiquinol form of coenzyme Q10 acts as a kind of gentle antidepressant, in addition, of course, to excellent support for the cardiovascular system and for endurance.
Mm-hmm.
Your take on that?
If I understand correctly, I guess the doctor is saying that, you know, sort of a gentle antidepressant for people who would benefit from it being that, not that it would depress people. I think that's true, and I think part of the reason is because of how it oxygenates the brain. It does more effective neurotransmission.
Okay.
And I think also because of its ability. Sorry, I tend to be sporadic, and when I think, it's because of just how it improves cellular energy, and people become more energized, and that in and of itself helps to lift moods.
Okay. All right. And it's either Philip or Philippe in Ashland. What is your opinion of proteolytic enzymes? Hope I pronounce that. Proteolytic?
Proteolytic, yeah. Proteolytic enzymes are extremely valuable for lots of things, for, you know, helping to break up inflammation. They're natural anti-inflammatories is one of the main things. And a lot of times people will suggest that they're taken away from food so that they don't work on the food, but they work on the debris in the body. I mean, some people even use really potent proteolytic enzymes for natural blood thinning to break up the protein molecules and the sort of the proteolytic, I guess for lack of a better word, carcasses of viruses, for instance, so that the blood actually naturally thins with proteolytic enzymes. I think the only problem with proteolytic enzymes is as they found some people with really serious leaky guts, especially if they have gluten allergies, gluten sensitivities, and they have maybe a lot of damage from gluten, proteolytic enzymes should be avoided in the initial stages until the healing of the gut lining occurs. But that's minor, as you know, compared to the great uses of proteolytic enzymes.
Okay. And he also asks, I'm looking at it now, maybe it's Felipe. I'm not really sure. It's probably one of those pronunciations. And Ashlyn also asks, what is the most effective supplement or supplements for depression?
Well, I always come back to the individual because, you know, everyone is different. and we all respond differently. We all need different things, and people have depression for different reasons, even different nutritional reasons. For one person, it might be a supplement that really helps to balance the blood sugar, where now the brain is getting fueled, and it's actually just ticking away and doing all the things it's supposed to do. For someone else, it might be amino acid deficiencies. So even something simple like 5-HTP, which we know through studies and through clinical work that actually helps to lift depression through enhancing serotonin levels. I think I do a lot of neurotransmitter testing with people, and I think the main thing that we find with depression is low serotonin levels. And, of course, you know, that's why people go on SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, because that, you know, the SSRIs are not giving you building blocks for serotonin. They're not actually healing, you know, that scenario. But what they're doing is they're basically helping the brain use the serotonin better, and which is why a lot of people who are on antidepressants have to switch medications periodically, because like that mechanism in the brain sort of wears out and they have to use another drug that works a little differently in order to get the same thing to happen. So nutritional supplements with 5-HTP I've found to be extremely helpful for lifting depression.
Okay.
And the other thing is I should say that sometimes people are depressed because of adrenal deficiency, because they've been through a lot of stress. We all go through a lot of stress, and it wears on us. And if our bodies are not properly nourished, or if we don't rebuild after, say, a traumatic event or just a long period of a lot of stress, then what happens is the body just starts drawing on its resources. It's like the body knows it has to get it from somewhere. So this is why I think a lot of people's bodies break down later in life, because I use the term we've robbed our banks. You know, we've depleted the savings accounts, and there's nothing left. And so it's really a question of then, you know, eating properly and rebuilding all that and nourishment and getting the adrenal glands strong again. I use a lot of specialized, customized nutrient and bioidentical hormone creams. A lot different from, you know, what you would get in a health food store or at a pharmacy. These are non-prescription. And we work a lot with depression and mood disorders with these creams that certain plant-based hormones like DHEA, for instance, can be really helpful for lifting depression. Working on the adrenal glands with, you know, balancing the hormones that they make, and therefore a person feels de-stressed.
Okay. Bill in Oklahoma City, recovering from severe ankle trauma, what do you recommend for joint repair, pain, etc.? Do you have a website?
Oh, my website is www.drlauratompson.com, drlauratompson.com. The best thing would probably be to call my office, because, again, it depends on you know, what's happening, how a person is eating, and what actually the injury is. But there are lots of joint products on the market. I'm sure you probably already tried some. But, you know, we can work with others as well.
Okay.
I mean, you have the standard glucosamine and MSM and chondroitin, things like that. But, you know, if you've already used things like that and you want to get further benefit, then one of the paths that I take with anyone who's had an injury or is recovering from a surgery is to actually get the hormones in balance, because the adrenal hormones are so involved with how we recover, how we recuperate, how we repair. Enhance the sleep, because that's where reparation is done. That's the time of day that we repair. So, you know, it's not just about what does the joint need, but what does the body need to enact the healing. So the adrenal glands are your glands that you really want to work on because they're anti-inflammatory and they help to do a lot of that rebuilding.
Okay. So, oh, let's see. Maybe I'm just going to say it's Felipe. I guess that's what it is. What natural supplement will increase serotonin levels?
Oh, again, you could go to a health food store and pick up 5-HTP or something with 5-HTP or tryptophan and B6. Those are really good serotonin level increasers. But I really focus on getting the gut healed because 90 to 95% of the serotonin in the body is actually made in the enteric nervous system, in the intestinal tract. So it's not just about what can you take, but it's about how can your body make it on its own. Mm. I love the fact that people can, I mean, I use a lot of supplements in my practice. I use natural hormone creams. I mean, those things are typically what help people get better faster, and that's important for people. But the real end result of working on yourself is to get your body to be efficient as it can be. You know, help it do what it was meant to do. And so ultimately, it's really great to get the serotonin made by your intestinal tract the way it's supposed to be. So that's my take on building serotonin.
Okay. And I would say as far as we've had some excellent questions.
Yes, we have. pretty detailed, interesting questions.
Yeah, sometimes it and I guess it shouldn't surprise me because it seems like no matter what topic that we speak on, there are people that just come up with, wow, those questions are like, okay, you know, and it's amazing how you can tell people have been reading, researching, mm-hmm. and trying different things, and it's always refreshing. It feels rather hopeful that people are taking that level of focus and intention to make things happen in this sort of way. I would just say if someone does have, you know, you kind of thought you might have a question and you didn't act on that yet, if you want to get a question in, because we're nearing the close of the webinar, and I don't want to leave anybody out that goes, oh, darn, I wanted to get that question in. So if you're on the phone line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad and we'll be able to unmute and you can ask your question. Or if you're online, just type that question in that little box underneath the link and submit that to us so that we can see the question and make sure it's asked. Because in just a little bit, I'm going to have Dr. Thompson to, give us any closing comments. But before we do that, is there a particular area or some things that you'd want to be sure and talk about today, Dr. Thompson, that maybe we haven't quite touched on yet? If so, this would be a great time to touch on that. If not, that's fine either way. I do think that I hear you inviting people to call your office, and in other words, when they first call you, you don't have a meter running ready to build. You give a complimentary initial consultation with you to see if, in fact, the two of you are going to work together, and if so, how you may proceed, and to give them some idea of what, you know, types of charges may be involved in any type of thing that you both choose to proceed ahead on. Is that kind of how it works?
Basically, since I have a phone practice, 75% of my patients are by phone. I work with people all over the country and even Europe and et cetera. So for some reason, I have two patients in Turkey. I don't know how that happened exactly, but anyway. So basically what happens when a person calls is one of my staff answers. My assistant takes all the initial calls of people who are interested in consulting, and she does a free consultation, goes over prices, answers questions, can you help me or can't you help me type of thing. And then if a person wants to talk to me after that, then, if they aren't sure yet, but they want to talk to me to make sure whether they want to go forward, then she would, schedule a short, like 15-minute time, something where I would do that. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure that feels very comfortable to people, because then they would have clarity in making any type of decision how they would proceed. And it sounds like you make sure that type of groundwork is laid, that they have that opportunity to feel clear. Okay, and we have the doctor once again in LA, and what the doctor says is, appreciate your responsiveness to my questions and comments, and I like Dr. T's chuckling, saying, anything made from petrochemicals, that ain't good. On the question of CoQ10 and depression, hadn't thought that much about energy effect on the brain. Will admit that makes sense. I will say that this positive effect is one I personally find. Depression and bipolar disorder run in my family, and when I manage to get myself out of the house on a lethargic day and have had my fish oil, lecithin, and CoQ10, everything seems kind of sparkly and fresh. That's all they say. Any comment to that?
I just got chills. Isn't that great that you could do something on your own like that and have that kind of a change? I would say that there's probably a good chance. I mean, I'm sure the doctor already knows this, but you asked me, so I'm just going to say that there's most likely a blood sugar issue, and especially in the family, if the family has been predisposed to bipolar problems, then I know there's a blood sugar problem, and because that's one of the ways I work with turning around bipolar is by balancing the blood sugar and and getting the neurotransmitters in balance and getting the gut health straightened out. And when you do all that, boy, I mean, it's such a great thing to see people go off their medication. One of the greatest things that I hear people say is, like, I'll give you a quick example. Yesterday I had a patient who, she was coming to me for hormone imbalance. She's like in premenopause time, and she has other problems, digestive problems and sinusitis, and she said, I always go through medication history, and so she's on Lexapro, antidepressant, and she's on, a couple of other allergy meds, so I always try to feel people out when I first talk to them about how, are they calling me because they want to get off their medication, because the kind of doctor that I am, that is really common, that people will say, I don't want to be on these meds anymore. How do I get off them? I always say, I can't take you off them, but I can help your body and your brain become more balanced so that you feel better. And I always say to people on those meds, especially the antidepressants, I'll know when you're ready, because you'll say to me, I'm ready to get off these. Because a lot of people are so dependent on their antidepressants, and that's exactly what this person said to me yesterday. She said, I'm on Lexapro. I know you'd like for me to be off it, but that's non-negotiable. And I said, well, okay, that's how you feel now, and, I respect that. And we sort of put the topic aside for a little bit, and later on in the conversation I interjected, but down the road, when you start feeling more energized, when you're sleeping better, when you feel more like yourself again, which is what a lot of people exclaim, you may say to me one day, I don't know if I need this medication anymore. And that's when I know you'll be ready. And if you don't say that, don't worry about it. So, that's that's kind of where my head is with antidepressants. I think I probably took this in a different direction than the original question, but it's really all about balancing the body and finding out what gaps are with each individual. And, the possibilities are really endless. So you really have to do good detective work.
Okay. Great. One of the thing that the doctor said is, I'm going to run. Thanks for the show. doctors are inherently very busy and on the run, so we really appreciate the time that was spent. Looks like the doctor was with us a good while, so that's great.
We're honored.
Yeah, we're honored. We're definitely. This has been great, and it's certainly the type of thing that we could, we could move in so many directions, and we could just talk for a long, long time. We really could. It's just fascinating, all the different subjects and information that can be drawn out. I think people have been able to connect with where you're coming from and get a sense of what you do. And in just a moment, what I think we'll do is because we're certainly past the hour, and I will, have you leave us with any final comments, and also to give us your contact information again. I want to remind everybody that we do these every single Thursday at this same time, and each week it's a little bit different as to who we have and what topic they may cover, and they go across the board. For instance, next week we have Karen Tostado, which a lot of you heard. She has the organization United We Strike, and the title of her, what we're going to be focusing on, is United We Strike, God-Given Rights Party. And she promises that she's going to make it fun, really fun, and do some humorous and unique type things on the webinar. So we'll see. We had her once before, and she left us with a song at the end at that time that was practically brought me to tears. So it was interesting. Anyway, with that, I wanted to say that you can look for not only this particular webinar to be posted shortly, but already our archives of many pages of past webinars going back probably a couple of years ago are there, including, I think, three different ones with Dr. Thompson's husband, John Rappaport. And you'll find them at republicmagazine.com/webinar. republicmagazine.com/webinar. And to look at our magazine and see our digital online edition, you can actually subscribe to it for free online and be sent the link every time a new issue comes out, and go through our flipbook edition. And you can find that at republicmagazine.com. All you'll need to do is just scroll down a little ways, and you'll put you can just put a first name and an email address in, and then we'll be able to send that out to you. For those that want the hard copy, you can actually try the magazine free. You can get your initial copy free at tryrepublicfree.com. That's just like it sounds, T-R-Y, Republic, free, F-R-E-E.com. And, certainly check out the website. We're supported in doing this type of thing, as well as publishing our magazine, both online and in print, and all the numerous other things that we do too, special events, streaming, lots of different things that we're involved with, by your support. So, certainly go to our website, subscribe to our magazine if you feel so inclined, support, become involved in whatever way feels appropriate, and we certainly appreciate it, and we'll continue to bring you the best things that we can to help inform you and to keep this information flowing that we also greatly need. We're not going to get it from the major media and the mass consumption means of learning about things. So with that, I want to say this has been a pleasure, and certainly at this time, Dr. Thompson, if you have some final comments you'd like to leave us with in your contact information, that would be great.
Okay, yeah, sure, Earl. I guess the biggest thing about looking at how to have a healthy brain and how to keep the brain tip-top is to look at the physical conditions that could be affecting behavior or emotions. What we talked about today, from blood sugar imbalances to nutritional deficiencies to infections and inflammation, to allergies, toxins, hormone imbalances, neurotransmitter imbalances. You know, those are the reasons that we have brain chemical imbalances. And those reasons are extremely individual. One person may have one of those. One person may have all of them. And so I think it's important to realize that we're all unique. Your brain chemistry is unique because your experiences are unique. And our emotions, our stressors, our food, it's all yours. So, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's really important to learn how to monitor your body and delve into these areas to get your, you know, your questions answered.
That's great. And once again, for those folks that, you know, would like to make contact and find out more information, is there an email? And I know that you've given out a phone number and also a website before, so this might be good to do so again.
The best thing would be to call the 800 number, which is 800-608-5602.
Okay.
Or the website, drlaurathompson.com. And my company, Southern California Institute of Clinical Nutrition, and that's abbreviated SCICN, so www.scicn.com. And call my office and ask for Kathy, and she'll... she'll start the process.
Great. Well, this has been a pleasure, and you know, I really enjoy the whole health arena, health and wellness. I've always been interested in that, and, as well as, you know, the whole issues around health freedoms. I know your husband John touches on that quite a bit too, with the pharma and the medical cartel and the whole thing that goes on there. So just the whole field, and one of our very biggest, in fact, I think it was our biggest issue in number of everything, of articles, of pages, of content, of advertisers, of interest, of everything, was our alternative health issue. And I'm trying to think what issue that was. It goes back a few issues, but you'll find it if you'll scroll down on the past issues and look for that. That in itself, for those of you that are listening that are interested in health, it may be a really good one to get because it has a lot of hard-hitting articles related to not only health methodologies and information, but also some of the things going on that are kind of scammy that have been hoisted on us, and how to be aware of some of that stuff and how it all works. So enjoy that, and thanks again, Doctor. It's been a pleasure today. And thank you to everyone that's listening. We'll see you all next week. And this officially ends our webinar. Everyone have a great evening ahead.
Thanks a lot, Earl.
Okay.
Bye, everyone. Bye.